You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Too many buyers think it's impossible to get a deal right now. Let's cut through the negative self-talk. The market may not be the problem. In this episode, we show how terms, especially financing, can tip the scales in your favor. We walk through a real-world case study where multiple offers came in, but the one with the right structure won. At Equity Builders, our members are locking in multifamily deals that cash flow within 6 months. In this market, join me to learn how.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now, here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fans, I have exciting news to share with you. Our monthly in-person networking events are back. If you're in the Montreal area, and even if you're not, go ahead and grab a ticket for our next event at equitybuildersclub.com/events. I would love to see you out.
Hey, real estate fan. So I want to talk to you today about something that I'm hearing a lot of and that I wish people who are talking in the real estate field would do a bit more to dispel. And that is this like negative self-talk, this doom and gloom about how it's impossible to get a deal closed, to find anything that makes any sense, to find an investment that will cash flow in the medium term in our local market in Montreal in Quebec. And so I want to just take you through a little bit of how some of my students at Equity Builders Club are cracking this code, how I've cracked this code in the last 6 months, and then also take you through a case study of a recent sale that I'm actually working on and to show you how a seller might think when confronted with multiple offers. So let's just start with the whole negative self-talk thing. And you know, you wouldn't believe at our monthly networking events how many conversations I have where some sort of downtrodden investor is coming in and being like, oh, the market's so competitive. I can't find anything that makes sense. Can you believe how difficult it is? I don't know if there are any more deals out there. Nothing cash flows right now. Like, you name the negative story that people are telling, like there's this kind of vibe out there right now that the market is so competitive that it's impossible to find anything that makes any sense. And so the first thing I want to do is to just kind of like poke a hole in that, because what I find weird is that I've done four multifamily deals since the beginning of the year. I am now tapped out of the work that I can take on currently. I'm going to maybe do some more deals probably later on towards the end of the summer. But as I've calmed down myself, I'm watching some of my students, some of our members at the Equity Builders Club go through and close similar deals that are also going to be cash flowing in July. And so it's a bit weird for me. There's a bit of like a cognitive dissonance going on where I'm hearing people come in with this doom and gloom, but yet at the same time, every day when I'm looking on Centris or when I'm going through and advising some of my coaching students on what to do, I see that they're finding deals that make sense in our local Montreal and surrounding area markets. So how does this kind of, where does the rubber meet the road on this? So I think the first thing is to also understand that the deals, the way that they show up on market, if they are on Centris or somewhere publicly listed, are not going to be screaming cash flow right away. Very often, there is some sort of a lack of experience on the part of the listing broker, because let's face it, some of those like smaller multifamily properties, so we're talking like six plexes, eight plexes, sometimes the brokers who are listing those are really people who work in the single family home market and who just happen to be liquidating that one multifamily asset that a particular client or family has. And so because they're not super familiar in dealing with this kind of market segment, maybe their rent estimations are off if there are any vacant units, or they will be missing something that perhaps might look different if it was a more experienced broker who was listing it. So I think that there's really like a whole lot of what we call listing anomalies out there. But that's not what I want to focus on in this episode. In this episode, I really want to assume that you see a deal that looks good, whether it's off market or on market, and you're then coming to put together that offer, and you're maybe a little bit in despair when you hear that there are five other offers. So what is going to allow you to move to the front of the queue? And I'm going to just by way of explaining this, tell you about something that's been going on a recent building that I am currently selling, that I'm selling with a partner of mine. And you're going to understand a little bit about how a seller might analyze that. So we just listed a sixplex that a partner and I own because it's kind of in the life cycle of that building. It's time to get rid of it. And we then had immediately within the first like 2 days, five offers come in. And, you know, the offers were, we listed the place at $750, and then we had offers that came in all the way up to actually $850 on this. So it was crazy overbidding. But what really ended up influencing us, and this is kind of what I want to take you through, because it's one thing on multifamily assets to want to overbid on price. For sure, that is one aspect. But for those of us who are active in the multifamily market, we also know that there is like a very common tactic, which is that people will overbid on price with the hopes of then whittling that down through the inspection process. And so when somebody comes in with, you know, an offer that's $100K over asking, like probably it's not going to end up there. So when you're a seller, one of the first things that you will look at when you get in the offers, obviously, is price. But behind the price is going to be who is the person who's making that offer. And you actually have more leverage here than you think as a professional buyer. And the degree to which you're going to be presenting yourself as somebody who's a professional buyer, a closer, and who is likely to go through and not pull out in whatever conditions, that's going to have a certain amount of influence. So when, you know, there's this kind of thing where brokers will do this presentation where they like present their clients, you know, and for us in this multiple offer process, the people that the profiles that we had was we had, so, you know, two professionals who offered that very high price, that $815 price. We had somebody come in at $815 who was proposing CMHC financing. So that's then another whole ball of wax. And I'll explain to you how we might perceive that a little bit later on. We then had a cash offer that came in at asking. And then we had a Desjardins financed offer that was also around $800. So in looking at this, what you're seeing are just like different things, right? And so like the first quality is, who's the kind of person who is willing to make a cash offer? Who's the kind of person who makes a CMHC offer? And then what kind of person comes in with residential offers? And so the two highest offers were these, you know, young professionals, or actually the second offer was a group of people. So there were like four names on the promise to purchase. And so just off the bat, by choosing what kind of a buyer you would want to deal with, would you rather deal with a couple of professionals who have a sizable down payment amount that's listed, or would you rather deal with a group of four different people who presumably one of them has borrowing capacity, somebody else has down payment money, and they've each pooled their $50,000 together to be able to do this deal? Just off the top of the bat, you know, it really, that second offer looks a bit unstable. It looks like not like the most solid thing, because when you have four names on the promise to purchase, like you can imagine as the seller that any number of things can go wrong in that process, where one of the partners doesn't like something, or, you know, how too many cooks kind of spoil the broth. Like that's one of the things that can happen there. Now, those two offers both had residential financing delays, which means that you're looking at a 2 to 3 week financing delay period, and they come with mortgage pre-approvals. So in the multifamily space, there are really like, you know, four different kinds of offers that you can get when it comes to financing. So the first is that like Desjardins or CIBC or RBC offer, where they are offering residential financing terms that come with a financing pre-approval. And so you, buyer, if you are in the position to get a financing pre-approval from one of those institutions, if you're looking at doing a 6 to 8plex, whether it's Desjardins or RBC or CIBC, that will be taking into account your personal debt ratios, but it tells the seller two things. It tells the seller that, first of all, they're not going to have to wait a very long time to receive that financing. And it also tells them that you can actually, you're financially solid enough to be making that offer. So as a seller, that is something that I will see in very favorable terms. It also tends to speak to your experience level as an investor, because typically that is telegraphing a lower level of experience, because somebody who owns 100 doors, chances are, is not making residential financing offers anymore. They're going to be coming in either with private money or with CMHC financing. And so that can be both a good thing and a bad thing, because when you have an investor who's like maybe less experienced coming in to bid on something, like you as the seller might assume that they're just so happy that they've won an offer that they might be easier to deal with than a professional investor. But that said, those are also files that will typically blow up quicker because an inexperienced investor will see something and get scared, whether it's the tenants, the quality of the tenants, or some kind of maintenance issue. Like, deals that you make with inexperienced investors are more likely to blow up. So that's the first thing. And so in terms of thinking about how you present your offer, understanding that when you come in with that residential financing, you are telegraphing something attractive to the seller because the close is going to be fast and they already know you have the budget to close. But at the same time, you're going to be telling them that you have a little bit less experience. Now, the next type of offer that you can get is the all cash offer or the private financing offer. And we had one of these, and typically these offers are made by fairly aggressive investors. And then sometimes they will also waive conditions. Like in this particular case, there was no inspection clause. There was just a visit clause. And so this is an attractive offer, but typically those offers are priced lower because the person who's making them knows that those offers are attractive. But now that said, somebody who's willing to just go in and waive inspection, basically, like when they're making that cash offer or that private financing offer, you're going to know immediately after the visit whether or not that is going ahead. And then the offer becomes final and you're going to the notary. And I will add that in this particular case, there was something a bit unusual because the person who had this cash offer had a really long close. So they had one week to do their due diligence, like to look at the documents and do their visit. And it was a cash offer. So there's no financing clause, but their closing date was 3 months in the future. And so as the sellers, we're looking at this and thinking like, okay, what's actually going on here? Because that person's making a cash offer, but ultimately the only reason why you would push that signing out 3 months into the future is because you are going to do a financing. And so what this means for the buyer is that they're putting themselves in kind of a risky position if they don't have the funds, because they have to obviously prove the funds that they have the funds to close. They have to show us a letter, whether it comes from, private financing or from a bank account where that money is there. And then they can turn around and put in place whatever financing arrangement they want. And so, us as the sellers in this situation, we were like a little bit worried that potentially if something goes wrong with that financing, because why would they have the 3 month closing period? Well, then the deal goes up in smoke. And so the solution that we found to this was to just have a big chunk of money. So $50K left in escrow at the notary that if ever the person, pulls out for whatever reason, after the offer becomes final, after they've done their due diligence and their visit, that $50K is immobilized at the notary, and that would offer us enough security to be able to deal with them. So that was kind of the lowest offer, but it's attractive simply because of the terms, right? Because you don't have any financing delay whatsoever. The person shows you a piece of paper with their bank statement on it that shows that there is that amount of funds available. And then that's it, finished. You're sending $50K to the notary. And then the final offer was a CMHC offer. And now what is less attractive and irrespective of price, because we had like a delta of almost 100K on these offers, right? My first two leaders in the race were Desjardins Financing. We then had somebody come in with an all cash offer, which was the lowest. And then we had somebody in the middle who came in with a CMHC offer. But now the downside of the CMHC offer is that super long financing delay. So you're looking at maybe on paper, they're going to put 90 days, but like in actual reality, those of us who are active in the market know that if you want to put a CMHC multifamily financing on a building right now, you're looking at somewhere around a 4 month delay before that actually gets signed. And so, looking at that offer, we're deciding like, okay, well, that offer is somewhat higher, but it's ultimately probably the least attractive of the four because of that really long financing delay. And in that 4 months, just about anything can happen. And, I was having a conversation with my partner on the deal and we were talking to each other. We're like, yeah, okay, Trump south of the border is doing Lord knows what. How is that going to affect the interest rates? Or, someone's going to fly a plane into a building and then all of a sudden that 4 month delay, like maybe things continue on their current trajectory, or maybe some other black swan event happens and we have COVID all over again, and then the market's immobilized and everybody's pulling out of their deals. So you would rather have the lesser amount as a seller. You would rather have that, you know, $750,000 cash in your account today than you would perhaps have $800,000 in 4 months, because there's just less certainty attached with that. And so what I wanted to illustrate to you by giving you these different profiles is that ultimately you, as the buyer who's trying to win an offer, have the choice of how you're going to present yourself to sellers. And even though there might be five offers on the table, there you actually do have more control than you think in terms of putting together that offer that a potential seller is going to accept or not accept. And so, you know, this is not the place to be recommending waiving conditions like inspections, or to, you know, say that you should have cash offers or private lender offers and then make a 3-month close, in which time you put together your financing. But be aware that these are some of the things, some of the strategies that other investors are using to win the offers. And just to kind of tie this up and give you some insight into what ended up happening with this is so that, well, the first thing is that my partner ended up accepting the Jardin offers. So we had two residential financing offers. He preferred the couple, first of all, instead of the group of four people, because that is kind of a sign of instability when you have too many people on an offer. First of all, it's signaling to you that these people are quite inexperienced, and probably also that they're not very financially solid. Just because if it takes four different partners to come together to do a purchase like that, it's really indicating that either somebody has revenue problems or that there's not enough down payment money with one particular person. So in terms of, you know, the amount of names that you put on the offer and how you structure things, and like, I could offer you a tip here also about placing an assignment clause in your offer, because if you are trying to, you know, get the seller to negotiate with you instead of someone else, and you're aware, let's say you are four investors together, you might potentially put an assignment clause into your offer that would allow you to then add those other names later on, but that you basically become the one, or one, you nominate one person of your group to be the one who shows up and presents the offer. Because when you have like five names on an offer, it's just not a very strong looking offer. And if there's five or six offers on the table, you might be putting yourself in second or third position just because there are too many names on that offer. So that ended up being our preference, was to pick those residential financing offers because they were more attractive. And then actually, interestingly, in third place, we had the all cash offer, because even though the CMHC financing offer was significantly higher, the risk of accepting something that's not going to close for the next 4 months just wasn't very attractive to, you know, my partner and me, who was advising him on which offer to accept. So I think that that's kind of interesting. And you will also notice the tactic, which is kind of, you know, risky, but at the same time allows you to win deals, which the professional investor was using, of making a cash offer, but then ultimately making his delay long enough that he could put in place some kind of financing. Now, I'm not sure that 3 months is enough time to put in place a CMHC financing, but perhaps it's enough time to work with a B lender. It's certainly enough time to work with a residential lender if that's something that's possible for them. And so in terms of how you structure your stuff, if you're willing to take a risk and put that $50K down at the notary, a lot of sellers are maybe not really going to care all that much that you're closing in 90 days. The important thing is that there's a deposit left at the notary and that the offer is final, so that no matter what happens there in the outside world, they know that you're going to close. So, real estate fan, I hope that this episode has provided some insight for you into how to put together the most interesting offer from a financing perspective, and to have you understand that, like, really just the way that you structure your financing and the way that you are presenting that offer to the seller really can have the impact of whether or not you get spoken to or not. And so, you know, the seller also, what they can do is if there's one offer that they prefer to the others, and that was actually the case of what happened in this situation, because the couple actually offered a little bit less than the four people who came together to make the deal. And my partner ended up doing a counter offer at a slightly higher price to the residential financed couple, because that was a file that we thought had a higher percentage chance of going through as opposed to the one that had four different people on it. So, you know, that's also an interesting way to understand how the sellers are going to prefer specific kinds of offers with certain names and then certain financing conditions attached to it. And that if you're aware that this is how the market is behaving, it allows you to structure offers that are more interesting to the seller. And of course, you do need to balance this with whatever your personal situation is. And if you're, you know, at the beginning of your investing career and you're looking more at doing a residential type financing because maybe you don't have access to that private money or else private lending is just too risky for you, understand that maybe, you know, you're going to be able to come out ahead by offering just a little bit more money because somebody might be willing to deal with you, as opposed to understanding that those private money offers are typically the lowest on the spectrum, just because everybody prefers to have like safe money now than more risky money in the future. And so that tends to be kind of the way in which this calculus is done, is that the further out the risk or the further out the closing is, the higher the price has to be to balance out some of those, you know, externalities. And so what I will also say is that for sellers who are maybe trying to get a higher price or who are trying to sell an asset that maybe the market prefers a little bit less, accepting that CMHC offer, that offer that's going to close 4 months from now, is kind of a last resort. But it means that there are properties out there that are trading on CMHC financing. It just means that they're going to be perhaps ones that other investors might have passed over. But then you also do need to just evaluate, like, what is that 40-year amortization and perhaps a lower down payment amount? Like, is it worth maybe making an offer that is higher? Because having someone accept those unfavorable length of financing approval means that, you know, you will need to maybe offer a bit more money, but maybe it actually makes sense to offer a little bit more money. So that's all kind of stuff that you should be considering. So if I can leave you with something, real estate fan, it's just to get you out of that negative self-talk that the market is too competitive to do any deals. And I will mention that we have a webinar on this topic on June 16th at the Equity Builders Club. So you can just head over to the equitybuildersclub.com website and look at our free webinar offerings. We're going to dive into more detail on this. We have in today's episode just discussed the financing aspect, but there are really four or five additional things that go into making those offers that are going to allow you to win in a multiple offer situation and still find those good deals that are out there. So don't stay in your doom and gloom. Have some words of encouragement and join me for the webinar, or please pass this episode along to somebody else who's got some super negative self-talk going on about how there are no good deals left out there in the market today.
The second exciting thing is that we still have a few more coaching spots available in our next cohort. If you would like to have a little bit more help closing on that next property, please go ahead and fill out the contact form on equitybuildersclub.com, and we would be happy to jump on a call and explain to you a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.